Recording in progress. I'm so glad to see you. But I don't know if you can formally vote, but it's great to have you here. And we did prepare the extra packet for you. Leon went to get it.
Yay. Okay.
It takes a long time for us to get the notifications. I just heard through the grapevine about Kyle. So, if like, was it a committee of the whole last week? Okay, so I think like it's formal tomorrow night, so I don't really know what to do.
I'm not gonna.
Like you, this is a great meeting for you not to want to vote. If I'm telegraphing anything. But I think it's really good that you're here. This is going to be there's a lot of good information tonight and some really important actions. So, well, the meeting's recording and I can keep letting people in. And Molly, I think you have a quorum if you want to start. This is the January 22nd Mental Health Board meeting. I've been asked by IT to say that so they can find the recording. Oh, you're right.
Robert's Rules experts in the room from County Board, so I'm a little nervous.
Okay.
Are we missing anyone?
Yes. Chris has let us know he can't come. So I imagine Joel will be here. Did you notice the range of like really not healthy and then pretending to be healthy, but maybe also not? Candy with a fancy name.
All right, I will now call this meeting of the Champaign County Mental Health Board to order Wednesday, January 22nd, 2025, 5:45 p.m. in the Shields Carter Room of the Brookins Administrative Building, Urbana, Illinois. May I have a roll call, please?
Chris Minor. Tony Nichols.
Here.
Joe Omosagie. Elaine Palencia.
Here.
Kyle Patterson.
Here.
Jane Sprandel.
Here.
John Paul Joachim.
Here.
Molly McClay.
Here. All right. Next, we have approval of the agenda. Would anyone like to make a motion?
I'll make a motion to approve the agenda as presented.
Thank you.
Second.
All right, we have a motion on the table and a second to approve the agenda as presented. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of approving the agenda as presented, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, same sign. The ayes have it. The agenda is approved. Next, we have the CCMHB and DDB schedules and an updated MHB timeline on pages 3 through 7 of your packet. So we do have action requested this time to approve the 2025 meeting schedule as presented on page 3, and the other documents are for information only. Lynn, is there anything you want to add about the schedule at this time?
We tried to, oh, that sounds weird. We tried to indicate whether they're off cycle, and the cycle is listed up at the top. It's the Wednesday after the third Monday of each month. But we were trying to stay off of holidays and also to pay more, a little bit more attention to the review of applications process, which takes a lot of time during the spring. So there's a meeting in there that you might not need, which is a joint meeting with the DD board. So it's still listed, and you just cancel it when we get closer to it if you and the other board chair decide that's right. So,
All right, thank you. Any discussion? All right, seeing none, I'd like to move to approve the 2025 CCMHB meeting schedule as presented. Can I get a second?
I'll second.
Thank you very much. Any further discussion? Seeing none, there is a motion on the table to approve the MHB 2025 meeting schedule as presented. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, same sign. The ayes have it. The meeting schedule is approved. Next, we have the CCMHB acronyms and glossary on pages 8 through 19. No action needed, but any questions, discussion, or commentary from staff? Seeing none, we will then move on to public participation and or agency input. So as always, all are welcome to attend the board's meeting to observe and offer thoughts during this time. I may limit public participation to 5 minutes per person and or 20 minutes total. So if there's anybody in person who would like to speak to us, you can approach the, makeshift podium desk with microphone up there. And if anybody online would like to speak, please raise your hand and or put something in the chat so that Lynn can see. Is there anybody who would like to share?
We have a cool new form that Leon created if people would like to sign in formally here. But also we ask that you sign in to the attendance sheet at least, and you guys did. Okay, thanks.
Yeah, I wanted to add, and you know, this can be for later in the meeting, we will have time for public participation and agency input as well. Lynn and I attended a meeting in Springfield of the Massey Commission, and one thing they did is have a sign up for public participation. I know that other meetings do as well, but we wanted to give options in case people feel more comfortable kind of discreetly signing up and want to be called upon to participate. But of course, you can still approach and put in the chat if you'd like to say something as well. So we will now move on to chairperson's comments. So I'm Molly McClay, the chair of the Shamet County Mental Health Board. And due to the frigid weather, I will defer my comments.
What? Challenge accepted. I was going to say stuff because it's January and this meeting has, to me, like a little bit, it's a little different from the other meetings.
That just means more time for Lynn to share and also for us to welcome
yes,
our new members
let's
to the board.
Let's do that.
So because our next item is welcome new members and or new old members. So we do have three members who are returning to the board on new terms and or reappointed terms, and that is Tony Nichols, Joe Omoosagie, and Kyle Patterson, who is coming back to us after his time as county board liaison. So do we usually give time to comment?
Let's do it.
Okay. And then should we? So we also have a new member from a new county board liaison, Emily Rodriguez. We are determining when it is official, but she is here tonight with us. So if any new members would like to share any comments for why you decided to join us, and if any old, you know, current members would like to wish welcome, you can do so at this time.
Well, it's definitely good to see Kyle back. You know, he was our fearless leader through the pandemic. So I'm glad to see you coming back to, you know, join us and help lead the ship again.
I will just note that in caucus, we did joke about voting you down, Kyle. So...
Burn. Well, I am very glad to see everyone. I know that Tony and Joe, you were had already been serving, and we're glad that you're reappointed. Kyle, we are glad that you're back. Emily, we are glad that you're joining us. So we just almost doubled our members tonight, which is interesting. So welcome all. Any other comments from any new or ongoing members?
I think for me, just hearing so many stories in our community, every day people are struggling and just wanting to be somewhat of an influence or try to be an influence to others, organizations, and helping them out, supporting them in any way that I can. So hopefully in the next year to 4 years that we can provide more support to people in our community.
Absolutely. Thank you for those comments. So we will go ahead and move on to our executive director, Lynn Canfield's comments.
So I didn't want to defer, but I'll try to be brief because the January meeting feels a little bit different for me, especially if we took December off. So it's been a long time. I don't know how to do this anymore suddenly after 2 months. But also we have like the new tradition of want to make sure that annual schedule is approved. We weren't doing that until I learned a few years ago we should be doing that. So now it's like there's some things that are easy to accomplish and important to accomplish in January, and that feels really good. The next one is we usually present the bylaws. This year I have, in 2024, I somehow became really interested in bylaws and found some causes for updates within your bylaws, and we'll get to that. I can say more about that when we get there. It's really a cleanup more than anything. So instead of just presenting them to you, there's like actually some consideration requested for some changes. It's also one of the few meetings where you get, and I think the next two meetings will also be like this, you get to hear from agencies for like a little more substantially than usual about the impacts of especially new programs. And I've seen this presentation once today. I think you're going to like it when you see it in a few minutes. So those are the exciting bits for me about January. The rest of it, there's a lot of difficult business in front of us. So I think that I'll just stop talking now. How about that?
Sounds like we are going to have a fun meeting tonight. All right. Well, next we will move on to approval of the CCMHB board meeting minutes. So we do have minutes presented from on pages 20 through 23 of the November 20th, 2024 CCMHB meeting included for approval. Any discussion about the minutes? Would anyone like to make a motion about them?
I'll move to approve the CCMHB November 20th, 2024 minutes.
And I'll second that.
Thank you very much. Any further discussion? All right, seeing none, all those in favor of approving the CCMHB board meeting minutes from November 20th, 2024 as presented, say aye. All those opposed, same sign. The ayes have it. The meeting minutes are approved. Next, we have the vendor invoice list on pages 24 through 50. So we do have action requested to accept the vendor invoice lists and place them on file. And we do have some additional details for these expenditures. So any discussion?
I just want to say thank you to Chris Wilson for this added detail. I really appreciated that.
I had a question. In the past, did we have Spanish interpreters for the expo? Because I see that on the vendor invoice list, and I'm happy that we actually had that this year.
They've often been volunteers. This year, there was a volunteer, and then there was one person? Did you see one interpreter, Spanish translator? Two? Okay. So it was nice that we still had a volunteer, but, you know, I think that it is important to make sure that we have them, if that means paying people for their work. Yeah. So.
Excellent question. So any other discussion or motions?
This is one of the, because it was the last time you met, you looked at October details. You have twice as much right now as usual. I'm sorry about that, but hopefully it's organized well. Chris does take care to find report options within Munis that are easier to look at and give you what you want to know.
I'll move to approve the vendor invoice list on pages 24 through 50.
Thank you. Any second?
I'll second the motion.
All right. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of accepting the vendor invoice lists and placing them on file, say aye. All those opposed, same sign. The ayes have it. The vendor invoice lists are approved. Next, we have the staff reports on pages 51 through 65. So included for information only are reports from Kim Bowdry, Leon Bryson, Stephanie Howard-Gallo, and Chris Wilson. Does anyone have any discussion or questions about the staff reports?
I guess I'm just curious, before the pandemic, what was our audit submittal, like, on-time percentage, like 2019 and before? I know Stephanie had that in her report.
Yeah, Stephanie's here. I will let her take that, but we have the records were not tracked the same way, and these were all, like, the board was not asked to grant exceptions prior to that. It was all staff would manage those questions, and they were due earlier. They were due in October instead of December. So one, the data are harder to find, and two, they're not as comparable. But she's here, and maybe she can give some insight.
No, I mean, I would have to really go back and look, and I'm not comfortable saying what it was before the pandemic. But Lynn's correct in that it's just in the last 4 years we've really started tracking it, because it seemed to be a problem, more of a problem. Audits were always late by some people or some agencies.
Do you
I can't say it probably not as many as okay. Now. But there were always some audits late. That's the best I can do, like, right now.
I appreciate it. Thanks, Stephanie.
Just, like, Stephanie's probably not going to say this because it might sound boastful, but the best information I found was in old board packets in her staff reports. That was where I could, you know, it's pretty reliably reported, but you have to know which month to look at, and some of the board packets are harder to find because, I don't know, like, some aren't posted the way I expected them to be, but that's where I found good details. So we can certainly keep looking for those details and share with you.
I mean, it sounds like it's roughly kind of what I thought, that there was always some issues, but it's gotten worse during the pandemic and hasn't really, like, improved very much, if at all.
I guess to follow up on that, there was a mention that the audits used to be due in October, presumably for those that are now due in December.
Yeah.
What was the reason for changing it to December?
Well, there was a sort of complex set of reasons. The most boring one is that we were aligning with the state's changed requirements, which is, you know, the most simple interpretation of your establishing statute is that it should rely on the state Department of Human Services rules. So if their requirement is you got till December 30th or 31st, then it's probably good for our requirement to be the same. So that was one, but there were other reasons too. It was very hard for some to make that October deadline, often because they were waiting for information from the state. And, you know, so like, and then also there were periods of the year when they could get better rates from CPA firms because they wouldn't be as busy. So it seemed to be a really easy move to just move the deadline closer to what people were actually able to do. But then the pandemic changed the circumstances one more time. And maybe I think the biggest problem was the workforce shortage with CPAs. But I don't, you know, the last time we asked CPA firms, that's no longer the barrier. And they're talking about other barriers. You know all that.
So, I mean, one takeaway I have is that we essentially have granted additional time to complete the audits, but also have had increased lateness and or asking for potentially increased lateness and also increased asking for exceptions, extensions, et cetera. Okay. Any other, I think helpful that some of these questions are coming up now because we will have an item later in the agenda that pertains to this, and also thinking about as our funding application deadline is coming up, how we will approach applications for whom an audit may not have been received yet is also an important discussion point. So, you know, if folks have comments on it now, or if you want to talk more about it at the later point in the agenda, that is understandable. But if anybody has further discussion on this or anything else in the staff reports, please share. So I did have a couple of questions. One was about in Leon's report, and this might not be information that there's a lot of yet, but there was a mention of early termination of some Rosecrans contracts that may be happening. Leon, would you be willing to share more about that?
Of course. So... Lynn and I met with Rosecrans, I believe, December 19th, and they shared some exciting news with us about their receiving additional funds and the no longer need for us to cover or fund those two programs. And so the services will continue. But we just received a letter from them, I believe yesterday, indicating, that they want to terminate the contracts. I think back in December 31st of last year. And so, on our end, we have to, do our, due diligence and look at the numbers of, funds that, are owed back to us, and then begin working on a contract amendment. So that's where we are. Just got the information yesterday, and we'll be working behind the scenes to get that resolved.
All right. And to clarify, this is for the Child and Family Services and the Specialty Courts contracts that we will be potentially getting money back or not having to disseminate those. Getting money back is always a good thing for us. Thank you for sharing that.
Does this mean then that we're not going to be funding the court ever again, like, or just this year? Because I know that's been a topic of discussion ongoing.
Well, I've learned not to say what's going to happen in the future, because and then it's different the next day, right? And it's like wildly different. But this is the result of new funding that they have through the CCBHC, which is Certified Behavioral Health Clinic project. So there are a whole bunch of things that they're going to have state and federal funds for now that you've been covering for this specialty courts for over 20 years. So I think the Mental Health Board will not be paying for that again.
We thought we shouldn't, right?
I mean, no, because Healthcare and Family Services, Illinois Healthcare and Family Services, has selected Rosecrans to do those services here on the state's behalf. So you don't have to pay for it anymore. It doesn't mean that there are not problems. That doesn't mean there are not opportunities to fund other things within the specialty courts, but those core services, without which there is no drug court, are now covered by that contract. So, and then the child and family services are also fully covered under their other Medicaid funding. So that's so nice.
Any other discussion? I did have one additional question. So there was a mention in Kim's and Leon's reports both about a meeting with a statistics professor at the university. And so I was just wondering if either of you, or I see that Lynn was there as well, if any of you would be willing to share more about what this potential project may be.
So we met with her, and then I completely forgot to send her the samples of documents that I wanted help with. They're documents that Kim and Leon and I are responsible for that present you with data in, like, the most old-fashioned, boring way. And one of the things this class can do is develop options for more effective data visualization. I was like, that's us. So, and these are not huge sets of data. They're not that complicated, but just to maybe, like, for our program summaries, where we're reviewing the applications and trying to show you some performance data of the past, and even not that long, like a year and a half. It's really not big sets of data, but just if they have ideas for ways that we can organize this information to communicate more easily, not just with you, but with the public. There's also that gigantic performance outcome report, which there may be opportunities in there to pull things and summarize in an interesting visual way. What else did we send them? I finally did send her some things, but she had to write the blurb for her students because I forgot. And the blurb she wrote was so good, we should ask permission to use it. I mean, it's about your work, and it's so nice.
I think you...
There was something else, though. I don't know.
Performance tables.
Maybe that's it. Okay. Well, yeah. Annual report. The other most boring thing. So, anyway, students don't have a lot of time to work on these things. The last time I met with a stats student club was a dozen years ago. We gave them 10 or 11 years of highly comparable data and never heard from them again. So I don't have a high expectation, but I thought, why not try? And then maybe we're going to give you easier to look at reports. Wouldn't that be cool? So.
All right. That sounds very exciting and potentially more successful than the giving the data to students and they disappeared days. So last call for any further discussion on the staff reports. All right, seeing none, we will move to new business. So first, we have a mid-year progress report on pages 66 through 96. This is the presentation. So representatives from CCRPC will give a progress report on the Community Life Short-Term Assistance Program funded through our IDD Special Initiatives Fund. And the items in the packet are the PowerPoint presentation. So thank you. And we look forward to your presentation. And I don't know if the microphone thing is on, but are we all hooked up with Zoom and everything?
Yep.
All right.
Yep, there it is. I was going to say, I was trying to get it pulled up. Sorry for the delay. I'm Angela Yost, and I'm the program coordinator of the Developmental Disability Services Program here at RPC. As I said, I'm going to present on our Community Life Short-Term Assistance Program. So the purpose of this program is to provide financial assistance along with supportive services to address the needs and desires of individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities by furthering community life, socialization opportunities with friends and family, opportunities for leisure or travel, educational advancement, entrepreneurial opportunities for them to be able to increase their independence and or improve overall well-being related to their physical or mental health. This program aligns with the board's priority for short-term supports by providing financial assistance along with supportive services to address needs and desires of furthering community life for adults with DD. We provide brief support services to those who need them to supplement the covered costs by assisting individuals with IDD toward further understanding, confidence building, and long-term self-sufficiency in the areas available through the financial assistance. So for instance, if someone's planning on taking a trip, our short-term case manager can work with them to help them plan the trip, plan out finances, learn how to use Uber while they're away. If we have someone who's purchasing technology, such as a device like an iPad, she can work with them on learning how to use that iPad, learning how to use email, whatever it may be that they're wanting to use that for. So program qualifications, an individual must be a Champaign County resident. They must have a diagnosis of intellectual or developmental disability and be enrolled on the PUNS. I will say that just recently changed to also include individuals who receive Medicaid waiver funding through the Division of Developmental Disabilities. They must be at least 18 years of age and have exited school services, and they must meet a household income guidelines at or below 60% of the annual median income. And so we're looking at household income. So initially we started the program only with people who were waiting on PUNS, and we found that our referrals were lower than anticipated. And I think probably part of that is that a lot of the individuals that we're working with are still living at home with family, and so that probably limited people because of the income guidelines. So definitely adding in people who have Medicaid waiver funding, who are living in SILAs with, limited income, now they're getting the $100 a month from their SSI, or individuals living on their own with home-based support funding will help us to reach a greater number of individuals and have a greater impact. So in order to outreach for this program, we sent out CLSTA flyers to everyone that we knew was on the PUNS list. So that's changed, of course, in the last year and a half since we were the ISC agency. Unfortunately, we don't have an up-to-date list, but I still have the list that we had back in June, and so I update that with information as I have it, as I get, you know, family sending new addresses, or I get mail back and know that, you know, something isn't accurate anymore. So I sent that out to everybody that I knew was on PUNS. I provided the flyers to Prairie Land Service Coordination, who is the new ISC agency for this area, and asked that they give it out to anyone new to PUNS, anyone that they felt would qualify, and then also provided it to our provider agencies in the area, and also offered to do presentations as well on the program. So far, we've been able to fund a few things. One of our first things we funded was an individual who was grandfathered into developmental disability funding. He's actually doesn't have a developmental disability, but has mental health diagnosis. We have been working with him for a while, but usually when we come and see him at home, it's a little later in the day. On this day, one of our staff showed up a little earlier and realized that he had a makeshift bed on his floor. And so we realized that he didn't have a bed, and he told us that he'd been sleeping on his floor for about 2 years. And so we were able to fund him for a new bed, a 7-piece bedding set. You know, he's reported that now at least he's sleeping comfortably. He's not having the aches and pains that he was reporting before. You know, we asked him just directly how, if it's impacted his overall mental or physical health, and he said he wasn't sure. But we're happy to hear that he's at least getting a better night's sleep, and comfortable. Client M, she's dually diagnosed with intellectual disability and mental health diagnosis. She recently moved back into the community after being in a nursing home for about a year, and sharing her room at each of the nursing homes she had been in. And so she desperately wanted to make her apartment feel like hers. And so she really wanted items to feel more at home and more cozy. So she asked for various items. And when I asked her what kind of impact these items have had on her, she phrased it in the perfect way. So she's just really just self-aware. She said that her positive affirmation signs help her with positive thinking every day. Her clock radio allows her to listen to country music, and this is calming for her when she gets upset. She got a water filtration system. I can't remember why she doesn't drink tap water, but she needed a water filtration system, and she said that this enables her to drink more water and helps her to be more physically healthy. And then she also got an iPad, and she's learning how to become more independent with this. With the help of Community Choices, she's learning how to check her email. She had an email address already, but she didn't know how to check it or use it. So she's learning how to check her email and how to sign up for her own volunteer shifts now. And then we had a couple who their second anniversary was coming up, and they wanted to take a trip together. They had never had a honeymoon, and the husband always wanted to take his wife on a honeymoon. And so they originally talked about wanting to go to maybe Orlando or Georgia, but then decided they wanted to stay a little closer to home since they had never traveled just the two of them somewhere. And so this is Caleb and Carrie. They gave us permission to use their names and their pictures. This was them waiting on the bus. They took a Greyhound bus to St. Louis. They reported feeling nervous and excited while waiting on the bus to come and get them. They reported that the bus trip felt very long. The seats weren't comfortable. And then once they got to St. Louis, they stayed at the Drury Inn at the Union Station. They were there from October 23rd through the 27th. They said that the hotel staff were very friendly and helpful to them. The first night there, they just kind of relaxed and took part in the 5:30 kickback that they have there. And then one of the days during their stay, the hotel staff actually surprised them with a bottle of sparkling grape juice and an anniversary card. And they were just so excited and proud of that, that they called several of us at RPC that work with them. And I know they called their DSC staff as well to let them know. And I got to say, like, they were so excited for this trip. Their DSC case manager went out with them and they bought new luggage. And so they really were so excited just to even be able to, like, go. So so these are just a couple pictures that Carrie took the first night on the trip and sent to us when she walked over to the Union Station. And then on the next day, that was their anniversary, and we had arranged for them to, they told us, so we met with them, our short-term case manager met with them, and they gave us a list of things that they wanted to do. And so we took care of getting the tickets for everything. So we got the tickets for the Arch. They wanted to do the riverboat cruise, so we got the tickets for that. And then they wanted to do the documentary movie. So we made sure that all the activities that they wanted to do in a day were kind of all in the same area, so they weren't going back and forth all over the place. And then for their anniversary dinner, they wanted to go to a steakhouse. And so we got them a gift card to Morton Steakhouse. They said their favorite part of the trip overall was the riverboat cruise. And then, so at Morton Steakhouse, they had a $150 gift card for their anniversary dinner. They called us that night, too, to talk about the food that they ate. They were so excited. Caleb talked about having lobster mac and cheese, and Carrie had mashed potatoes with sour cream. That's the only thing she told me she had. I don't really know if she had anything else, but she was very excited about the mashed potatoes. But they were excited because the restaurant also gave them a free dessert. And so they said this was their favorite restaurant. Let's see. And I should say also that, as I mentioned earlier with the Uber, they learned our Tiara, who does our short-term case management, worked with them on learning how to use Uber. They'd never used Uber before. So she worked with them on getting the app on their phone, learning how to schedule an Uber, and then we got Uber gift cards so that they could do that pretty seamlessly while they were there. And then she worked with them on making an itinerary so that they knew kind of where they were going each day. But as the trip went on, they started getting, you could just see their confidence building in themselves because they started just going off the itinerary and being like, but we're going to do this instead. And it worked great. They did an awesome job there. So I don't want to go too long on this, but they went to the aquarium at the Union Station the next day. They had the Super 6 package, so they were able to take part in like all the indoor activities there, as well as do like mini golf and the carousel and the wheel if they wanted to. And then they had a gift card for dinner at Landry's Seafood House that night. And then they got another free dessert that night as well from the staff there, because they must have told them it was their anniversary again. So they got free cheesecake, so they were happy about that. I think they told me it was key lime. They were so happy about all the food. And then on their last day, they went to Build-A-Bear and made a bear together and then took off to the zoo. They just noted that the butterfly wing and the dome was their favorite area of the zoo. So just some takeaways from this, from their trip. They said that they felt like it helped them to feel more confident in themselves and in their ability to plan trips and go on trips together. They had fun. They felt like it was peaceful and relaxing, and they're already like wanting to do it again and planning like to submit an application in the next fiscal year, and they already know where they want to go. So it's been pretty awesome to see that. At the end of the second quarter, we had funded a total of three people. Under the husband and wife, we put all the funding under one person. So we had all of that just under one of them. So that's why it was three instead of four. And since that time, we have been able to also purchase a washer and dryer for a mother who is dually diagnosed and has, I believe, her son's around 2 years old and trying to maintain. She owns her own home and trying to maintain a home and work and take care of her little one. And it was hard for her to always try to find childcare to get to a laundromat. And so we've been able to do that. And we also have I'm going to skip ahead to show, purchased a prom dress for the Night to Shine prom coming up on February 7th. This isn't the exact dress. I have a picture of it, but it was just while the individual was trying it on, and I don't think she would probably want that picture shown because, you know, the dress isn't altered or anything yet. It's very similar to this dress. It's very beautiful, and we're excited to be able to do that for her. She's going to be getting her hair and her nails done, and we have the gift cards for her for that. I'm working also on a gym membership for someone. And then we have one more big trip that we're planning. We have a husband and wife who are wanting to go to Chicago. So that's in the works now. They want to go to a White Sox and Cubs game. So we've got the weekend mapped out and are hoping to get tickets here in the next week or so and get their trip all planned out. So just really quickly, some successes is just that we've been able to get the program going, establish a working relationship with CCAMR so that we can forward requests that maybe aren't so time sensitive onto them to see if they can fund them, and, you know, actually begin getting some things funded. There have been, you know, some challenges as well with a lot of the referrals that we were getting not always meeting eligibility guidelines as far as financially, or I got a lot of people calling in for their children who were under the age of 18. And then just some delays in the funding process as we worked out kinks of the new system, which I think we have really come a long way now, and we're really starting to move along on everything, and we're not having those hangups any longer, so that's great. And then just another success is, you know, just great collaboration with our provider agencies, and they're jumping right in to help people, you know, get suitcases or, you know, do the things they need to do to be able to help along with the funding. So anyway, obviously we are taking referrals. And, you know, happy to consider anyone that might meet eligibility guidelines. So that's everything. Any questions?
Any questions from the board? Or comments?
Thank you for a great presentation. I actually was reading this the other day when my husband was driving, and I was like telling him how exciting it was. So when this proposal was first given to us for consideration, I had some questions. I was the one who was like, $3,000 per person, that's a lot. So what was the estimated cost for like the St. Louis trip?
So I think that one came in just under 3,000 total. I know it didn't exceed because we had started out thinking we were going to have to kind of spread it between both individuals because they were both receiving county funded services and weren't Medicaid waiver. And so we thought, okay, they're both applying. We can definitely do this. And then as it progressed, we were like, oh, we're not even cracking the surface of the 3,000, and we're able to do everything that they're requesting. And so that was really awesome. And just to see their excitement and how to see their confidence, like really come out the further they got into the trip was, I can't even explain how great that was to see.
Now that's amazing. And I remembered the day we had some self-advocates here and someone was wanting to learn another language. Now that would be something that could also be covered by this program. It's like a tuition waiver type thing.
Yes.
What? Okay, excellent. Thank you so much.
Yep.
Any other questions or comments?
Thank you.
I did have one. I was just giving space for the other board members. I just wanted to, you know, thank you also for the program and just reading about all the different experiences that people have gotten to have as a part of this. I'm a therapist outside of my mental health board time, and a lot of what I encourage the people I work with to do is like build these positive experiences into their lives. You know, we talk a lot about evidence-based interventions and all these different things we can do in therapy, but a lot of the times the things that help the most are just like getting to do like enriching things, like, you know, getting a bed helps improve sleep, which definitely improves mental health. Being able to be more connected through like technology and email, and then getting to go on a trip where you get to have all these amazing memories and like build that confidence too. Just hearing about everyone's joy in this process and what they gained from it was really awesome. And as someone who got engaged in St. Louis and had my wedding there, it was really cool to kind of relive some St. Louis memories. Definitely have some St. Louis recommendations, but I'm going to have to check out some of these places that they went, the steakhouse, the seafood. I haven't actually been to Union Station, so some really, really cool stuff. Thank you so much. Anyone else? All right. Well, thank you so much for this presentation. And we will now move on to our next item of new business, which is also exciting, but maybe not quite as fun. But it's the notification of funding availability, which is on page 97 of the packet. So we have from information only is the affidavit for the program year 2026 notification of funding availability. So, Lynn, is there anything you want to share about this?
I know this is exciting. This is very exciting to me because we made it in time. We got it in the paper twice. This is really Stephanie Howard Gallo's purview, and she did. We had a conversation. Tony Nichols and Molly and I had talked about some ideas, and one of the ideas was get this into other publications. And Stephanie actually, you know, made some efforts to do that, but didn't get responses from people in time because we have this 21 days ahead of the opening of the system, so she couldn't wait anymore. So it's in the News Gazette and on the two websites, which one is the county's website and one is the application website. Sorry. Last year we got the DI because we knew what it would cost in time. Stephanie, I'm sorry for speaking for you. This is 100% your work.
Sorry. But that was.
That's okay. Just reaching out to smile politely, and the DI was not successful this year.
Well, hopefully they will respond next year in time, and not to diminish the excitement of, you know, it is also very exciting in a different but in some ways similar way, because now we get to see what applications we might get for this year. So thank you both for your work on that. Any board discussion on this? All right, so we will now move on to our next item of new business, which is the draft revised CCMHB bylaws, which are on pages 98 through 103 of the packet. So we have CCMHB bylaws presented with some suggested changes highlighted. We also have a decision memorandum that kind of summarizes the changes with a suggested action. So Lynn, would you share more about this?
This is, again, Stephanie and I put this together, and it started with, I noticed something that we haven't been doing that's a new flexibility under the Open Meetings Act that you haven't been taking advantage of because we didn't know about it. And once we found out about it, we're like, yes, you should have that flexibility too. It's just one more reason a person might be allowed to participate virtually if needed. So that was where it started. Then we started looking at other things that need to be updated, either because the statute, the Community Mental Health Act, has changed, or because of the particulars of Champaign County's form of government, the executive form of government, which, and I, like, there are experts in the room, but I think that there are certain things that apply only to Champaign County and nowhere else. So we tried to get these bylaws to conform more closely with all of those changes. I don't think there's anything else, maybe a typo here and there, but for bonus points, I did share it with the State Attorney's Office Civil Division Chief, and he thought it was fine, and he asked, you know, he said you could put other things in there, other rules and guidance for yourselves, and but it's also okay not to do that. And I thought, yeah, that's a lot. So anyway, but he also approved it. So I got Stephanie Howard Gallo and Andrew Beckett saying this is solid. So hopefully you will like it. Let me know.
Thank you, Lynn. So we have the actual bylaws are on pages 99 through 103, and then we have this memo that summarizes everything and has the suggested action. So any board discussion?
Yeah, I don't have any problem with the changes you've made, but in the very first paragraph A, I was just kind of stunned to see that construct, repair, operate, maintain, and regulate community mental health facilities. That sounds so 19th century. And so that's just there in case we ever have to build an asylum. I mean, that's so weird. I'm just laying it out there.
That is a very good point.
Let's just think about that going forward.
Well, and in fact, in our very limited experience with owning properties to provide services, we've ran into so many barriers that were, like, you know, policy related. So that part of the Community Mental Health Act is absolutely outdated, but you're not precluded from funding services. So, like, so onward.
But I also feel like, you know, it is a little barbaric, but I also feel like that gives us also the opportunity if we want to build a building that offers 24-hour service for those who are having mental challenges, not to reside them, but to, you know, assist them in their time of need. So, but yeah, I kind of saw that too, but I'm glad you're not, or I wasn't the only one who was like, gosh, that's, you know.
Thank you both for pointing that out. Any other comments or things that we might need to change?
If there is no further discussion, I'd like to make a motion to approve the revisions to the Champaign County Mental Health Board bylaws as presented.
I will second. Any final discussion? Just a point of order question. I don't know if I'm using that term properly, but do we need a voice or a roll call vote for this since it's bylaws, even though it's not finances?
No.
Okay, then we will not. Well, with that, all those in favor of approving revisions to the Champaign County Mental Health Board bylaws as presented, say aye.
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 All those opposed, same sign. The ayes have it. The revisions to the bylaws are approved. So next we have another action item that was a sort of last minute addition to the agenda, and that is for the relocation of staff offices, which you can find the decision memorandum on pages 104 to 105 of the packet. So this decision memorandum presents a possible option for relocation of the CCMHB and CCDDB business offices, and action is requested. So Lynn, would you like to share how this came about?
Some of that story is in the memo. I think like key points from today. We're still working on what the cost differences would be for three different potential scenarios. We just saw the space yesterday, so I didn't have an opportunity to, like, you might not have gotten this memo if we had gone over there 2 weeks ago and it was awful and not a good option for us. But basically, like, this relates to a change in the county's plan. One department is not going in to the building, leaving some space that we might be able to use. So some of us did go over there yesterday and did a tour and many questions, and we've been asking a lot of questions ever since then. Chris and I are trying to figure out exactly what the rental costs would be. It's, you know, small increase, a little bit bigger increase, and then a bigger increase, but we need to get the numbers. But we have, Leon was there and he's willing to speak to what we saw, right? Am I right?
Absolutely. So, yeah, we went over there yesterday, had a chance. The office space is located on a third floor in the Bennett building. Our offices are accessible via or by stairs if we want to count our steps, or we can take the elevators. And so once we got up there, we had a chance to look at, I think, up to eight offices that were available to us, along with a potential records room for us. I will say that the space is very clean. It's fresh carpet. Paint looks great. What else can I say? Oh, security. It's very secured. So staff will be required to carry a badge, which will be our way to get in the building to our offices. The first floor, I would say the Shields Carter room is about twice the size of this room, I think, on the first floor in the Bennett Center. So it's well laid out. It's nice space, and it's very I think operational for us. So my one caveat or one requirement, and I mentioned this to Lynn, was to have heat, because sometimes in our current in my current office, heat comes and goes, and so it's some days it's cold, and we have space heaters in there. So this will be a change of pace, and so provided that you all agree to it. I think myself and other team members would greatly appreciate it. So that's kind of my take on it. We haven't decided who's going to get what office. I think the offices are maybe, I don't know, same size, a little bit smaller, maybe?
They're a little bit smaller. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've talked with the county administrative staff about this, that really the thing we really need to do is preserve some files for a really long time. And that, so if we can digitize some of them while they're doing digitization, we might be able to reduce how much space we need. But that's really the heart of our work, is these, is this kind of archive that Stephanie manages. That's really, I mean, we have to keep it. It's also super interesting stuff and useful. So that's, you know, we might have smaller offices to be in, but if we can unload some of the paper, that won't matter. So yeah, we're working on all those things at the same time. Going light on the budget would be amazing. If we don't go, we have a very uncertain future, which would include figuring out where to rent or purchase. And then, so that adds some processes that we need to do with you all, and potentially much higher costs. Though, because we haven't gone down that road, I don't know, but it's, I think that the last time that we were asking around, the rate that the county was charging us was the best rate that there was. So, and there are some advantages to staying. What I was surprised with is that everyone liked the space. Mm-hmm. I was not expecting that. Everyone liked the space. So I just want you to know that, like, the staff perspective is not complicated. Yay. And I mean, we need things that are not complicated. And then the DD board was also all for it. So, I mean, this is the very first step. I just needed to be able to tell the county as soon as possible if we were interested in coming or not. Because if not, they're going to shop it around to other potential tenants. So,
do you actually have a date that they would like to know by? And then obviously
tomorrow.
Tell them to get those written information to you tonight then.
Well, I mean, some of it has to do with what other departments might want. Like, so there's some space that other departments might still take, how much we can reduce the square footage that we need for files. No matter what we come up with, it's not going to be a huge cost, but we are still working on those details. And I think that I feel much more positive about it myself. At first, I was thinking, oh man, we got to change the letterhead. Like, what is that, like $100? But it was really in the forefront of my mind. And I also do not like putting things in a box to carry them somewhere else. Like, that is so, I would rather stay here forever than do that. But we do not have the option to stay here forever now. So.
And then one final question. Maybe. So I love when I hear about safety precautions and stuff like that. I was glad to hear that you have to have a badge. Not that you have a lot of people who visit your offices from the general public, but is it accessible, like, for a board member? Can I come bring you coffee? Do I just have to check in at the front desk, or how does that kind of work?
I would have to know you're coming. But there's, like, part of what we're looking at is, like, there's a whole bunch of little tiny offices. And I was thinking, well, you know, maybe one of these is for board members to come and do stuff. Like, because sometimes we have board members who are waiting for a meeting for several hours in advance and need a place to work. So there's a lot of, yes, you can visit. There might even be a place to sit.
So essentially what we are doing is, it's not a guarantee that you will go there, but we're authorizing you the opportunity to, like, terminate this lease and enter into a new lease. And it sounds like the DD board was all go ahead on that. Would this one be a roll call vote because it has to do with signing a lease and therefore money?
This is something I've been a little bit, it's a little weird. Like, my relationship to these boards has been from the beginning, like, I can sign all kinds of contracts on your behalf. When it's a big contract, I don't want to do that. So this wouldn't be a big contract. So I don't know, like, if to be on the safe side, let's do roll call, but it might be nice to bring you another action when I have more details. you know?
Yeah.
Just, I don't think it's going to be a whole lot of, it's not a big, we don't, I do not even sometimes know what the county's going to charge us for the services that we receive from us until the next year when we get the bill. So it's kind of also in that category of like, you know, there's not lots of negotiation. We get, we look at the rationale, we look for any errors, that's it. So do you, is that okay to do a roll call anyway, but maybe like I'm going to bring you more information in the future? Okay.
Yeah, I think so, for sure. Any other discussion and or motions?
I will make a motion to approve the relocation of staff offices to the Scott M. Bennett Administrative Center and to authorize the executive director to terminate the current lease and enter a new one with the county pending staff assessment of the space and contingent on approval by the Champaign County Developmental Disabilities Board.
I'll second.
All right. Thank you very much. Any final discussion?
I think it's very exciting.
Yes, I'm very glad that like that you all like the space, because I think we didn't, you know, when this was added to the agenda, we weren't even sure if you would be able to see the space beforehand. So now we have extra information. All right. Well, all those. Oh, no, we're doing a roll call vote. So the motion is to approve relocation of staff offices to the Scott M. Bennett Administrative Center and to authorize the executive director to terminate the current lease and enter a new one with the county pending staff assessment of the space and contingent on approval by the Champaign County Developmental Disabilities Board. May I have a roll call?
Tony Nichols. Tony Nichols?
Yes.
Elaine Palencia?
Yes.
Kyle Patterson?
Yes.
Jane Sprandel?
Yes.
John Paul Joachim?
Yes.
Molly McClay?
Yes.
I'm here.
Hi, Joe.
Hey.
Joe Omosage?
Yes.
All right. So with that, the motion to approve the relocation of staff offices, authorize executive director to terminate the current lease and enter into a new one is approved. So we will now move on to old business. So we have a few different updates this evening. So first we have the evaluation capacity building project. So we'll have an oral update provided by representatives from our evaluation team. So please take it away when you're ready.
Hello, good evening. I'm just going to do a quick update on the core pieces of the evaluation work we've been doing. So first, we did an outcomes workshop in November, and we got some really helpful feedback about how to improve our work moving forward, and overall it went really well. We had 25 agency representatives attend and about 18 agencies as well. And then our associate director, Dr. Nate Underland, has been working on and is near complete logic model series, going through the different phases of going through a logic model, and has a fun chef metaphor that I am looking forward to everyone here seeing. And then it's been about a year since we started technical assistance with four programs, and over the year we've done about 30 formal meetings, including Zoom and in person, and then also just some informal things and background work, doing survey development, survey programming, and people have been getting involved and engaged. And I have someone currently looking forward to doing data analysis, which is super. And then we're starting to think about some spring trainings and planning those moving forward. So that is a very short and sweet summary, and I'm happy to answer any questions from there.
All right, thank you. Any board questions or discussion?
Thank you all. Stay warm.
Thank you so much. All right, and next we have the Community Behavioral Health Needs Assessment Activities Update, and this can be found on pages 106 to 109 of the packet. So information on the Community Needs Assessment Activities or results, and I think we'll be having, you know, more of these updates, but this month we have a summary of immigrant needs, and this may support our discussion and planning. So Lynn, whoever you would like to designate to share more about this would be great.
I will designate myself. This is something that we have the Mental Health Board, the DD Board, and a whole bunch of other partners operating in Champaign County who have a responsibility for a strategic plan and a needs assessment work together on one community health needs assessment, and the coordinator for that project gets really passionate about the behavioral health stuff. And so I just called him one day and said, could you give us a report, just some kind of report on all that's like million to billion public forums and hearings that you've had this last year and what is turning up. And he was so excited, and we agreed this should be on your agenda every month and that I should bring you some little piece of information every month. So we have, this month we have information from Ricardo Diaz about the immigrant project. I believe he prepared this for the county in response to the ARPA funding that several programs had received, but he also shared it with us. He just shared it with me like a little bit late to get into our priorities document, but it's, I think it's still great to have. And then next month I have something else for you, and then we may take a break from it, but it might be nice to have a standing agenda item in case any of you have insights about community needs assessment activities, because this is a very thoroughly surveyed community. And so there's always some data we could bring you to look at, but this stuff seemed important because we didn't get it before, and now it may be especially timely.
Any board discussion about the materials that we have been presented?
So this is the year that we'll have the shared health plan too, and then some priority setting meetings community-wide. They don't always go deep enough to be like perfectly aligned with what you all are doing, but they will. We can include them as part of this regular item and part of your strategic planning process.
I guess I'll say something. You know, obviously with previous years, you know, we've had a lot of need for trauma-informed care. I think this year, more than other years, there is going to be a lot of need for trauma-informed care from many different aspects worldwide, not just immigrants, but also, you know, refugees as well. So obviously our community is more of an international community, and we're going to have a lot more of that. So I think that is something we need to make sure we keep in mind, that we serve that part of the community as well.
Thank you so much for that comment. Any other comments? I'll add on to that, because I completely agree with you, Dr. Joachim. Just thinking about, like, you know, in reading about some of the cases that are presented in these materials, seeing some of the trauma that individuals experience before coming here, And then also recognizing that individuals are likely to incur additional trauma upon coming to the United States, especially in the current climate. So I think, you know, this work is more important than ever. Just seeing, I do remember last year, Immigrant Services did a presentation talking about some of these things as well. And it was really striking just learning about things that individuals are experiencing. I was also struck as a therapist seeing the work that the contracted therapist is doing, 525 total therapy sessions, all these letters that the therapist is writing that are extremely involved. I know I've had to write letters for other kinds of issues that do not even come close to approximating like 50 page long letters. So I think that both, you know, the individual served and those who are providing the services, you know, it shows how much that this is needed. So really grateful to see this information and to be able to learn about this more. And, you know, if any other board members would like to share, please do.
Of course, as I was reading my packet, as my husband was driving, you know, the statement on 107, you know, this will continue to be a need without bringing politics into the mix. And again, many of you know me personally. I know you personally, and we don't always see eye to eye. And so this weighs on me big time because I feel like we need to take care of those who've had this trauma. And you're right, they're going to continue to face traumas. I think sometimes even the helpers are getting traumas. I feel like I'm a helper, even though I've been called terrible things because of how I cast my vote. Again, try not to get political on this, but I think we have to just reach across the table and start caring for our neighbors and forget about how you vote, how you do. We just got to give love to each other. And my heart goes out to these people who, yes, have fled countries because things were so much more terrible than I can even imagine. So I'm glad that we're able to fund these organizations. And I think they've got a long road, and hopefully we can continue to help fund them and help them.
Thank you. Anyone else? All right. Well, seeing no further comment, thank you very much for presenting this with us and for the opportunity to receive more of these updates in the future. So next, we will move on to the Disability Resource Expo update, which is on pages 110 through 137. So we have a report from the Expo coordinators about this fall's event as included in the packet for information. And Lynn, if there's anything that you or anyone else on the staff would like to share about this, please do.
I think it's really well presented. They've covered everything. Maybe Leon wants to add something, but I'm good.
All good.
Okay. Any board discussion?
Actually, I do have a question. Lynn, do you know, have they had any luck finding a date for... I know they are looking at a couple dates. I haven't heard an update. Okay, thank you.
We've been having a totally different discussion, and I forgot to ask if they've made progress on that. Yeah, we've been talking about social media because it's gotten overwhelming for them, so they want to focus on the event. Okay, yeah. But yeah, that's a great question. I'm sorry, I don't know.
It was definitely interesting to see about how the evaluations changed this year, you know, switching back from an online evaluation where there were very few responses to a paper evaluation. I know when I was at the university, I saw that commonly with student programs when we gave them something to fill out. They did so if it was on paper. So being able to see a higher response rate and the good feedback about the program was really nice. Anyone else? All right, seeing no further comment, we will now move on to the last item of old business, which is an agency request for waiver of payment suspension, which you can find a letter about this on page 138 of your packet. So included for consideration is a request from Family Service that the board waive suspension of payments due to late PY 2024 audit and authorize the CCMHB staff to release payments as scheduled. Our action is requested. So, Lynn, do you want to share any context, or would you prefer for us to defer to?
I can. I think sometimes when I give more details, it makes things much harder to, for you all. So why don't you start? And Ms. Dowling is here.
Yeah. Sure. You can come forward and you know, speak about the request.
Sorry. So Nicole Dowling, the executive director at Family Service, I think we put a request in and let Lynn, the mental health board, know towards the beginning of December that we knew that the audit was going to be running late due to some changes with our fiscal changing to CLA. I'm happy to report that the audit is in the second phase of being reviewed, so we are confident that it will be done the beginning of February, if not by next week. So, we're confident and they're working really hard. So as soon as we get that final copy, the board is ready to have a special meeting to get that voted on and then get it submitted.
All right, thank you.
You're welcome.
So I open it up to board discussion, both if for sharing perspectives and also asking any questions that you might have of the agency.
Molly, you know, in our discussion, we were wondering or wanting to explore what were some of the causes for the delay in the audit.
Sure. So I started in November of 2023. As you know, there was some transition at Family Service. And then we transitioned from our controller and outsourced to Clifton Larson Allen to streamline processes within the agency. And during that time of really going from paper to more electronic, we switched over to QuickBooks Online. There was that transition during that period. And then Clifton Larson Allen did have a change in the staff person that we had that delayed our audit by getting started by 2 weeks, which caused that effect with Kemper. But we've been working diligently to get that up so that we would not have hopefully, you know, causing our services are delayed in payments. So
I guess just for everybody, you know, as far as I know, this is the first time since I've been on since 2019 that they've ever requested an extension. I don't know if you could state for the record, is this the first time that you know of the agency requesting an extension?
Yeah, yes. It's my understanding this is the first time.
So that is not accurate. So last year they requested an audit. They didn't request an extension, but they were late on the audit. And then the prior year they requested a extension to the actual funding application.
Okay, so I do apologize. That was out of before my time. So I do apologize for that oversight.
Well,
can you add some
I thought
to
your
that?
Question was specifically extension related to audit payments. So you're right. And you are right.
It's on the agenda. So I do have a question about the reason for asking for continued payments to happen, because we know that there have been many times, as we've alluded to earlier, that agencies have been late with their audit, and the only real incentive to complete the audit besides contract cancellation, if it's more than 3 months late, is that suspension of payments. So I am wondering what specifically is prompting the request for continued payments. I know it's vital to the operation. I know it's vital to the operation of any agency, but what specifically would be a detriment to waiting for the audit to be turned in terms of, what are the specific needs around being paid now rather than the payment being released when the audit comes in?
Sure. It is just a matter of just keeping cash flow. I mean, that would be the main the request is just to keep receiving the payments. We were hopeful that we were going to have it, even though I sent the letter, that we would be completed by the end of December. I'm just knowing that, we are internally that it is getting completed a lot quicker than we had previously anticipated.
All right, thank you. Say that again, Lynn.
So I don't always have time to prepare cover memos to go with the agency request. So I've been putting suggested motions on the agenda, which is not convenient at all. So I've got to figure out a better way. I apologize. Now you got many. Yeah.
I guess I did have one further question, which is, there's an extension for continued payments, but that language is kind of open-ended. So I know that the January payment has been suspended. Are you seeking only that payment, or are you seeking further payment until the audit is turned in?
I think we would like to request that the continued payments. I think if I knew that it was going to be extended out longer, I might be hesitant to ask that of you, but to know that I am confident that we will have it completed, by the beginning of February, I would request that.
Okay. I hate to slow things down. Just to be clear, because when we issue the payments, the January payment goes out the end of December, early January, that February payment is going to be issued in early February. So if you are looking to cover all gaps, you would authorize release of January and February payment, even though the audit might come the very next day. Do you know what I mean? And I don't know if you knew that. This is a lot of times we're looking at reports overnight to make sure that we can issue a payment. So.
And then, Lynn, if they say that they don't turn in the audit, when does the contract finish for this funding?
March 31st.
Okay. And then they have to apply for new funding for this new year, correct?
Well, yeah, that's a very... That is
funding,
a whole thing we have to figure out. Yeah, because so like at March 31st, which is the end of the grace period, we used to just, we would automatically cancel the contracts and then agencies would come and ask you to undo that. So rather than that, now we just will bring you the question. If it gets to be March 31st and there's no audit, what do you want to do? Cancel the contract or not cancel the contract? So that's the natural end point. Some of the agencies who don't have audits to us, who didn't have audits to us by December 31st, don't have to apply for funding, which is due, the applications are due February 10. Technically, an agency is not eligible for funding unless they have a recent audit, but it's not necessarily due by February 10. But when is it due? And what is fair, since some of the agencies with late audits don't have to reapply because they have two-year contracts? So this is a whole other really super important question that's coming up on you, like right around the corner. Was that an answer?
So their contract ends this year. So they if they want more funding, they have to apply in February, correct?
Yes, this is what they have, contracts that end at June 30th. But without an audit, they end March 31st, potentially, if y'all decide. But I understand your question was different. Sorry. No, yes.
You're okay. You're good.
About half of the agencies with missing audits have to reapply for funding, and then the other half have two-year contracts. So how do we make that fair? I don't know.
So this is a topic that I'm always very opinionated on, I guess. I really am thankful you came tonight. This is not a direct, you know, to you. It sounds like you're doing everything you can. I appreciate that your board recognizes that once this audit is in your hand, that they need to approve it. So maybe you've heard that from another agency that they weren't as fast on that. So I really appreciate that your board recognizes that that would, a need for an emergency meeting would be needed. I love that it's almost done. Hopefully it'll be done by February 1st. In the past, we've asked, you know, if the CPA firm is the one who is holding up the thing, if they can send a letter saying, hey, it's in our office. Here were some of the hangups, whatever. Again, this is your first rodeo, so you didn't know that, but that might be a thing. So then here we get to the but in my conversation. We have spent lots of time talking about black and white rules. This is our policy, and I do not want to be the one that makes Family Service Center our example, but we as a board, excluding our new people, we have talked about how we got to start following what the policy is. If they didn't have the audit in, then it is acceptable to suspend the payment. That's in our contracts. It's in the application, et cetera. I recognize that not having the January and February payment till maybe sometime in March could be painful for an agency. But someone signed on the dotted line that we will make sure we take care of everything in the contract. So again, I'm not trying to make this a personal thing. I'm not trying to use this personally towards the agency. But as a board, we have to decide, are we going to keep talking about this and, you know, changing the rule? Or are we going to say, hey, we made a decision, so we have to do the tough part. So tough love and parenting, I don't know. It's just unfortunate.
Yeah, I, Jane, I agree that, you know, I've been on the board since May 2022, and this has been a perpetual issue since I've been on the board of agencies asking for exceptions to the rule. And, you know, in my work, we talk about, you know, accountability when, if we can, and boundaries. And if we continue to not uphold our boundary, which is the stipulations of our contract and our funding requirements, then I think we'll continue to see exceptions being asked for. I do struggle to understand, because we did give agencies longer to complete audits. They have 6 months. And my understanding when we sort of talked to a CPA in the fall when we were evaluating the situation with Promise, we learned that an audit, when everything's in on time, should take an average of about 8 weeks, if I recall correctly. I know this was something the staff sort of surveyed. So, and the processes with CLA started almost a year ago. So I am kind of struggling to understand that timeline in terms of why has this taken so long. I appreciate, the advance notice and the plea to the board. But I am struggling with this decision, and I'm open to, hearing from other board members, of course, on what we should do, because, continuing to grant exceptions will likely mean that we will continue to be asked to give them.
So I have a question for Lynn. All the other agencies that have late audits, are their payments suspended currently?
Yes.
Have any of them asked for an exemption?
No.
Thanks. Is there an impact on staff for accepting or reviewing late submissions like this? What's the trade-off here?
Wow. Well, that's so complicated. It's really complicated because it is our job. And, I actually wound up back reading the Illinois Administrative Procedure Code today for an issue related to this that the DD board is dealing with, and felt really comfortable with all of your rules, including the authorities that are built into your rules that give you flexibility. That flexibility has become sort of a major time-consuming, stressful, sometimes divisive public conversation for you all, and I feel really bad about that. So I don't know I'm sort of lost for how to support the board better. So I feel like you're asking me about the impact on staff, and my head's not in that right now. I talk to the staff a lot about these issues, so I know the impact on staff, but I've become more preoccupied with what it's doing to you all. These are hard conversations, even though each individual request is not. But then they accumulate, and we start thinking about the impact on the whole system. And then it's, I don't know, but that's not a good answer.
Okay, one follow-up question. Does this imitate in any way? So as many of you know, the county is no stranger to late audits.
Yes.
Is there a schedule that is similar to that of the state in terms of what happens when things are late?
We've aligned it with that of the state because that's the nearest structure to what the mental health board rules should look like and the DD board rules should look like, is what the state is doing. So we are aligned as closely as we can be with their requirements, their grace period, their strategies for noncompliance. We may be unique in that our staff read all of the audits and we ask questions as follow-up because we're kind of alone. Everyone I run into is either wondering what's going on with their tax dollars or has a stake in the services, so I feel like I need to know, I need to be able to tell you with some certainty if your money was spent well. And so we really do read the audits and we follow up, and it takes a really long time. So I think the staff impact is that the later the audits get, the harder it is for us to finish those reviews in time to give you the kind of certainty that you might need to make the next set of funding decisions. I think that's the biggest piece. So
Okay. Thanks for humoring me. I know I'm new, but hopefully it would be helpful to other people who might be watching.
But the issues that when the county has had problems delivering an on-time audit, you know, I've paid attention to that. If the county can't do it, then maybe there's a reason that small nonprofits can't do it. So, you know, we have been watching that unfold too. And I think that has complicated my feeling of conviction about enforcing the rules, honestly. There was one year when and I think that you were on the board back then and some of the old timers that you know, I said, I don't think I can move forward right now because of the lateness of the county audit. When we first started to notice the lateness of agency audits, that was actually a delay. I'm sorry to be so blunt, but you're asking a question that really resonates, so.
You will get any kind of offense from me as far as I'm just as critical on the late audit. So,
thank you for the question. Any other comment?
I think I was exploring this this week, and I think it's unfortunate that family services have, in 30 years, haven't really been part of our stress as far as audits, and that. In the recent, 6 months that I've been on the board, there has been a lot of stress and communication about these audits. And so I think that that's unfortunate timing that you're coming and making this request. I also know that it is difficult as far as trying to run a business and you need cash flow and all the different expenses and paying salary and employees, and that can be challenging too.
We just keep having this same conversation, but year after year. But that's why we talk to agencies about having a broad funding, a broad financial base, and not depending on us, but having other sources and endowments when possible. You know, start an endowment. And there at one time was an argument, well, if you've got enough money to start an endowment, you can just use that to pay for your services. But really, I mean, we can't be the only. I know that there are pots of money, and you have an agency has our money designated for certain things. But that does become an issue, how in time of crisis, is there backup within the agency? So that's another thing we've talked about.
So there, we do have funds that we can use. I do understand your frustration, and I understand their rules, and so I respect, the comments that you're saying, and I understand that's the way it is. I came into the agency. I'm not making any excuses at all. You know, I've been here a little over a year. And so there were some changes. You know, we did have an executive director that was there for many years that, had to retire early and pass and from cancer. And then we had someone that stepped in as an interim. You know, it was supposed to be 6 months, ended up being 18 months until that I came on board. So working through and cleaning up some things. And I understand the having the timely audit. All I can do at this point is just apologize. And I do understand the need for rules and to follow those. So I respect what you're saying.
I know that we don't have a decision memo or, suggested actions. There is one possible at motion sort of in the agenda. I've sort of written other ones that I can draw from. I guess what I'm seeing as the options are to go ahead and grant, the options would be to grant the request to continue payments until the audit comes in and issues are resolved, One would be to continue to suspend payments until the audit is turned in and all issues are resolved. And a third option might be to release one payment and not decide to release further payments until especially if the audit is going to be coming in very soon. That might be a happy medium, not happy really. I don't think any decision will make anybody happy here. But those are some options that I see. So I think, we can continue our discussion, and or if anybody has a motion that they'd like to make, we can discuss that further and vote. But those are some options.
Based on what I know about family services, our family service, I would go with a partial payment to start out and give them a chance to do it. We're here to hopefully keep people. Yes, there are rules, and yes, we want to run things on a business model, but this is not a business. And I've known Nikki since she was a student of mine. and family service helped my mother. And it is personal. Maybe I should step out not vote for this. But I believe this is not a business. And we do things that are right.
I think my biggest thing is always making sure that, or the two things that I always think about is, staff burnout with extra work and stress that puts on them. And then, how this would affect the vulnerable in our community and balancing everything. I know we've had these conversations many times. And I usually always, I want to be, concrete and make things black and white and be strict. I think I'm probably more that way with different agencies since I've been here 5-6 years now. I know, right? December 2019, that's like a little bit more than five now. I think I haven't had any issues with family service in my time here, and I feel like I'm okay giving an agency a mulligan, just a one time. And I think for me, the stick would be canceling the contract and no further funding after March. And then when they apply, when other agencies also who have late audits, when they apply, I think they're not going to be as prioritized in funding when I'm looking at funding for agencies who turned their audits on time, who's been compliant. So I think I'm okay using that as the stick. But that's my perspective. I'm fine if other people have different perspectives. I think for me, it's making the system work and making sure that obviously we don't want to make agencies feel like they have a lot of leeway with the rules and that they can do whatever they want, but at the same time, just making the system work for the people in the community. So that's my thought.
I always think there's always a stick. I think family service knew there was that stick, and it's nothing new. And I think Ms. Dowland is trying to. This agency has been through some turmoil over the last couple of years, and most of our social service agencies have been through quite a bit of turmoil over the last 4 years. And so there is that stick. I coordinated an agency that lost its funding, and I will always come back to that. I understand those things occur, and there's a vacuum that would be left. So
John, just to clarify on your statement when you said like that sort of putting a higher priority on agencies that were on time and lesser priority of agencies whose audits weren't on time, are you referring to like the December 31st deadline?
The funding for when we start approving funding for applications.
Right, but I mean, I guess for the audit, like if they didn't turn the audit in on time, by on time, do you mean December 31st? And then potentially if an agency didn't have an audit in by March 31st, then we'd be looking at cancellation of contract and complete ineligibility. I mean, I know this is a separate issue, but it's also very related. And the next time that we have an official meeting, applications will have been turned in. So this is kind of our last chance to discuss that, too. Does anybody else have thoughts they want to share?
I think a happy medium could be that approving for January and February, and that given the track record of the last 30 years, I think that it makes sense. I think that's meaningful when you have a relationship that long with an organization that has provided on-time audits. I think that that means something. And the stories that I've heard recently as far as people out in our community that are struggling, I'm not going to go into any detail. I think that the money is better served with organizations trying to do something in our community. And I think a happy medium would probably be possibly approving for January and February.
Is January and February what, like essentially what is being asked for currently? Or is that just kind of being asked for, you know?
Well, at this point, the February is going to be paid before we even meet, right?
No. If we receive the audit in early February, they will have missed the February payment too. You know, it's like a matter of days, which feels kind of weird, but that's why I asked you to think about the February payment. I'm trying not to influence your discussion. I have to step out for just a second too. Sorry.
You know, I had thought that I probably would not grant this request because we have started to uphold this boundary that we have of our requirements in the fall. I'm willing to. I've been swayed by the message that you've shared and other board members, but I don't think I'd feel comfortable releasing both January and February because that would essentially be, all payments until the audit comes in. I guess if the audit is, you know, further late than into March, then, you know, there's multiple problems. I would feel, you know, comfortable releasing January, and then if things continue to be delayed, you know, potentially hearing a request for February in the February meeting, but I am open to, you know, what other board members think.
I'm open to that.
Let's do it.
All right. Well, I was going to like Frankenstein a motion here, and then we can have further discussion about that. But I will move to waive suspension of the January payment due to the late PY 2024 audit and authorize CCMHB staff to release the January payment as scheduled.
I second.
Any further discussion? It sort of feels weird to do a vote when Lynn's not in the room, but that's true. Well, seeing no further discussion, we can go ahead and vote. So the motion is to the board will to waive the suspension of the January payment due to late PY 2024 audit and authorized CCMHB staff to release the January payment as scheduled. May I have a roll call?
Tony Nichols?
Yes.
Joe Omosagie?
Yes.
Elaine Palencia?
Yes.
Kyle Patterson?
Yes.
Jane Sprandel?
No.
John Paul Joachim?
Yes.
Molly McClay?
Yes. All right, with that, the yeses have it, and the board will waive suspension of the January payment and authorize the staff to release that payment. We will now move on to public participation and or agency input. We do have a sign-up sheet, if anybody, but I know we don't really have anybody left in the room.
We're going to have that.
It looks real cool, too. Did anybody sign up on it? Okay. Yes, the chair, I reserve authority to limit individual participation to 5 minutes and or total time to 20 minutes. So if there's anybody in the room who would like to share or anybody online, you know, either please approach the podium or please raise your hand or put a message in the chat online. Is there anybody who would like to share with us? All right, seeing none, next we'll move to board-to-board reports. So as always, board members can serve as a liaison to other boards, and there are a few board members who do attend other board meetings, both agency meetings and community-wide meetings. Are there any members who have a report to share?
Yeah, since our last meeting, I've been to two community coalition meetings, and I just want to say I think everybody should go to one, at least one. But if you have, I know you have jobs, so if you have to choose, the December one is a compilation of everything that's been accomplished during the year, and it is a wonderful meeting to go to. You will feel so good about the community and all the initiatives. And the only other thing I will say is that since I have been going, the proliferation of agencies has been really remarkable. I remember back when it started, most of the agencies were those funded by us. And now there are so many different ones and people that you wouldn't maybe think would start an agency. You know, but their personal experience has made them realize that they're not the only people with this problem, you know. So there have been some wonderful presentations, and I just think we're doing a good thing by supporting the community coalition, and we're thanked for that. And I think everybody should experience a meeting.
And it is fostering more interagency collaboration.
Now, I think I might have to go as long as there aren't too many board members there at the same time. Then we can make sure that's not a separate meeting. Yes. Any other board-to-board reports? All right, seeing none, now it's time for county board input. So we have a part of the meeting where the county board liaison shares, you know, input. You can if you would like. Anything new from the county board?
I mean, there's always interesting stuff going on with the Champaign County Board, let me tell you. Things that are coming up, really ugly budget decisions, gird yourself for that conversation in general. That's the only joyous update that I have from the county board.
Thank you. Next is Champaign County Developmental Disabilities Board input.
Yes, please. They met today, and this conversation that y'all had, and I'm grateful for the sensitivity and the thought and the questions that you all ask before and during and after in these conversations. That, if you think that was hard, you need to watch the recording of what they went through today. They haven't done this very often. They have not had to consider requests for exceptions to the rules, and this is a really big one, kind of out of nowhere. It was so difficult, and I think it's just stayed with me all day. So this is why I ended up looking at the Illinois Administrative Procedure Code, and to you all's defense, theirs and yours, there is in addition to living under the DHS rules, there's language about regulatory flexibility that boards such as yours have a right to exercise with regard to small businesses and nonprofits. And that can include exceptions to reporting requirements, a reduction of compliance requirements. But, I think the way you all do it is like remarkably sensitive, and I hate how much time it takes, and I hate how hard it is for everyone, because this morning was so hard. But just to like to pat you on the back one more time, you probably remember when there was a 2-year budget impasse in Illinois and social services in the region all around us disappeared, some of them never to return. And the only factor that the enduring social service system in this county is attributed to is the mental health board. So it works, and I'm so sorry, it's really hard, but I hated seeing them go through that today, because the issues they're dealing with are hard enough already. So anyway, that's the input.
Thank you. Next, second to last item on the agenda is board announcements and input. Any board members have any announcements or input? All right, seeing none. This has been a long meeting on a very cold day. So the last item is to adjourn. Next week we will have a study session on Wednesday, January 29th at 5:45 p.m. right here back in the Shields Carter room. And I hope to see you then, and have a good night.
Recording stopped.
Weeks. Yeah.